pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Back. This is the Jeff Poor Show. This is not Jeff Poor. This is Representative Andrew Sorrell from up in North Alabama, also a candidate for state auditor. Really have enjoyed guest hosting for Jeff today. Appreciate him inviting me to come on the program. Before I bring up our next guest, by the way, we got Shane Stringer. I'm really looking forward to this interview about constitutional carry with Representative Stringer. But before I get there, I want to give a special shout out, special thank you to Representative Victor Gaston from down here in Mobile, a good friend of mine. Literally without Victor Gaston, I would not be in the state legislature today. I met Victor when I was campaigning back in, I think it was the fall of 2017, and he gave me some really, really good advice about where I lived in my district and just some good political advice, and said, basically, if you want to get elected to state house in that district, you need to move. And it turned out to be excellent, excellent advice, and I appreciated that so much. And he's just been a joy to work with. He served in the state legislature. I believe it'll be 40 years by the time he wraps up this last session. And he was elected first in 1982, had to run again in 1983 when they redrew the district lines. But we just appreciate his service so much. He served as our pro tem in the House, and just wanted to give him a special thank you and a special shout out. But without further ado, let's bring on the line my friend, Representative Shane Stringer. Shane, how are you this morning?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Wanted to dive right in on constitutional carry. Can you give the audience just kind of a general overview? When we say constitutional carry, what exactly is it? What do you mean when you say that?
Constitutional carry is the basic principle that if you are legally eligible to possess a firearm, you should be able to carry that weapon concealed for self-defense without government permission.
Okay, great. Yeah, that was excellent, excellent 30-second summary. So in Alabama, you can open carry. You can legally open carry. You can strap a pistol on your hip. You can walk out the front door, and you are perfectly legal. But if you put a coat on over it, if it's a little chilly, you know, after Thanksgiving, maybe the weather's dropping, put your coat on over it, you're a criminal under Alabama law.
That's correct, you know, and that's what I try to explain to people. It's not going to be a lot of change if this bill passes or when it passes. You know, we're already an open carry state. Everybody can open carry now. Like you said, the only time that it becomes illegal is if they put a jacket on or get into their vehicle. You know, and you and I have kind of used some similar scenarios, you know, in that situation. You know, I come home from work and park behind my wife's vehicle. She gets into my vehicle, which I have a firearm, to go to the store, gets pulled over, and law enforcement finds that gun, she does not have a permit, she could be arrested. And in her situation, with her profession and her job, she could lose her job, her career, over this. You know, she can go from an upstanding law-abiding citizen one day to a unemployed criminal the next day.
You're absolutely right. We call this constitutional carry. I'm not even particularly in love with that term, because it seems to implicate it seems to insinuate that the Constitution is where you get your right to self-defense from. And I don't think that's true. I think your right to defend yourself comes from your creator. And that right is enshrined in the Second Amendment, which clearly says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, that seems pretty clear to me. Is having to purchase a permit an infringement to bearing your arm?
I agree with you. You know, and that's one of the things, I took a deep dive into this 2 years ago and really started doing my homework and looking into this more and reaching out to a lot of the citizens, a lot of the law enforcement in other states that have this bill, Constitution Carry. You know, it was pretty evident that not a lot changes with this bill other than the law-abiding citizens, the responsible citizens, are finally treated better than the criminals are treated on a different scale. You know, we have the right to defend ourselves. And, you know, I've heard from sheriffs and different ones over the last year or so how the permits have created a tool for law enforcement. And that concerns me. I don't think that we alter the Constitution to give law enforcement or anyone a tool. You know, I've been in law enforcement 30 years, and I have family that are in law enforcement. And, you know, I just think the Constitution is what the Constitution is, and I think that we need to you know, stay focused on that. There's 21 states that have constitution carry now, similar laws, and I think you're going to see it even more across the country, and as other states are taking a deeper dive and look at this. And, you know, I think we really need, in Alabama, we really need to strongly consider this and look at it. You know, been a lot of debate, a lot of discussion over the last approximately 9 or 10 years with the sheriffs and the legislature in trying to prepare for this and get ready for it. And truthfully, I think that Alabama's ready for it at this time.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And here's what blows my mind, Shane. We are so willing to sell our constitutional rights back to our state, or allow our state government to sell our constitutional rights back to us, because it's going for a quote-unquote good cause. Now, we are good conservative Republicans. We are pro-law enforcement. We do not want rioting in the streets. We want to fund our law enforcement. We shouldn't fund a good thing by selling people their constitutional rights back, right? So let me give you this example. Let's say that we were going to fund law enforcement by charging a poll tax. Yeah, you have the right to vote. Just drop $10 in the box on your way in the polls. But don't worry, that money's going to a good cause. It's going for bulletproof vests for law enforcement, right? What would your response to that be?
I totally disagree with that. We should not be funding anything, any fraction of government with a tax or permit, you know, over the Constitution. If law enforcement needs to be funding, then let's step up to the plate. Let's fund it the way we should. I have not talked to the first legislature member that has been willing to take money away from law enforcement. Everybody I talked to appreciates and loves our law enforcement and wants to support them. And we're going to do everything we can to protect them. If we need to add a line item or something in the budget to, you know, to as a, I guess, a stepping stone to wing the law enforcement, the sheriff's departments off of this money, then I'm willing to do that. I mean, we have got to do something. We would not be willing to alter the Fourth Amendment to give unlawful search and seizure, give law enforcement, I guess, rights to search homes or vehicles without warrants, without probable cause, just as a tool. You know, so why are we doing it on the Second Amendment? We need to address this and fix this wrong. You know, in the early 1800s, when permits came about, they were created for the wrong reasons. And, you know,
they have a racist history. They absolutely have a racist history. That is so true. If you look at why they were created, they do. I don't have time to get into that right now, but they do. They have a very, very racist history. So let me ask you this. Why the resistance the last 10 years? I mean, if there's one thing that every single legislator is sworn to do, it's to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Alabama. I think the Constitution is pretty clear on this. No,
that's right.
I've never had anyone come back to me and argue that, you know, oh, no, the Constitution, nah, I don't really think it meant that you should actually be able to carry your firearm with you. The Constitution meant you should be able to purchase it, but then you have to leave it at home unless you have special permission to actually take it with you. What? Nobody makes that argument. That's an insane argument. So why the resistance to getting this bill moved? What has been obstructing this bill?
I think it's strictly been the Sheriff's Association, and I think they have just grown to rely on the money that is brought in from the pistol permits, you know, and I think that we're going to have to address that. You know, we shouldn't be penalizing law-abiding citizens, you know, because let's be truthful about this. The criminals are not the ones buying permits.
Right.
The criminals do not adhere to laws now, so why are they going to worry with going to get a permit?
And here's a practical problem with this current system that we have. So I was down here in Baldwin County a few weekends ago speaking to the Baldwin County Bama Carry Group. And Kim Harris, the leader of that group, stood up and she told a story about a woman who was being stalked. She had a stalker after her. She knew that person was after her. She did not have a permit. She was not legally allowed to carry a gun. And the sheriff's office was closed on the weekend. So, you know, you don't have a constitutional right apparently on the weekend. You can't go apply for a pistol permit and get it on short notice. And I believe she said that individual was murdered, was shot dead because she didn't have a permit. And those are the stories that we don't hear about.
That's right. You know, and you and I hear them probably more than most. And, you know, I've had that conversation with Kim also. This is, you know, and then not only that situation with the office being closed on a weekend, but think about what we've looked at over the last 2 years with COVID. I know personally the sheriff's office here in Mobile County was backed up due to the COVID and people having to get their permits online and renewing them that way and purchasing new ones. And that system was backed up pretty far at one point. Now, of course, the sheriff's office did everything in their power to try to keep that from happening. But, I mean, some things are just out of their power.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to touch on the money for a minute, because you and I are both pro-law enforcement guys. You are a law enforcement officer. I have family members. I have a cousin who is in law enforcement. Obviously, neither of us want to defund law enforcement. I hate that we have the system set up the way that it is already, where we are funding law enforcement by selling permits. We want to make sure that that revenue is protected for the sheriffs. But that being said, is it even necessary to put anything in the bill up front? I don't think it is. I'm just going to tell you my opinion. I don't think that it is, because what's happened in other states when constitutional carry has passed? What has happened to their permit sales?
Every single sheriff that I have spoken with in states that have constitution carry said that their permit sales went up. I had one that said theirs dropped about 10%, but every other one said their permit sales have gone up. I'm like you. I really think that if we give the sheriffs a chance to come back to the legislature next year or a year after this passes and give us an update.
Sure.
But I'm confident that you will not see any major changes and maybe even some increases in the permit sales.
Yeah, and let me explain why that is. I mean, because I'll tell you this. If constitutional carry passes this year, I will still renew my permit. I'll probably get the new lifetime permit. Will you still get your permit, and why?
Absolutely. And every citizen that I've spoken to in my district and in Alabama, every single citizen has said that they would continue to get their permit because they see it as a $20 donation to their sheriff's department to continue to support law enforcement. And they would like to have it, you know, of course, where I live is close to the Mississippi line, and everybody crosses state lines. So they would continue to get their permits for that purpose. But everybody I talked to says that they will still continue to get it. Even some have told me that they see it as a $20, they consider it a $20 insurance policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's look at states like Arizona that have had constitutional carry for 10 years now. Their permit sales have tripled since they passed constitutional carry. Nobody saw that coming, right? I mean, everybody would have predicted. Now, the only state where I think permit sales have gone down is Alaska, because it's landlocked by Canada, and you don't need a pistol permit for reciprocity if you have Canada, if your neighbor is Canada. All the other states, I mean, I live right on the Mississippi-Tennessee line. I'm, you know, probably 30 miles from both. Every time I go out of state, I still have to have my pistol permit. And, you know, you know this about me. I own two gun stores. We used to could accept a pistol permit and not have to run a background check on you. You'd already been background checked if you had a pistol permit. 17 sheriffs in Alabama.
You know, and that's one of the things. Up until 2019, an Alabama citizen could use their permit as their background check, as their next check in purchasing a new firearm. In 2019, the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Federal Agency, did an audit of the system and determined that there was either 17 or 18 sheriff's departments that were not conducting the proper background checks. So because of that, they were selling the permits, taking the money, but they were not running the proper background checks. So because of that, you know, the state of Alabama, our citizens are no longer allowed to use their permit as their background check, as their NICS check. So, you know, the argument that this is a officer safety, a citizen safety issue, I think is null and void. You know, we have permits now. Several sheriffs have made mention to the FBI crime statistics and how high violent crimes are across the country right now and the increase. But we have permits now. We have fiscal permits now. And if they are such a great tool in helping prevent this and take guns off the streets, then why is crime increasing and going higher? Why is the crime lower in the states that have this bill, constitution carry, than the states that do not?
And
I think this is something we've got to look at.
On that note, we're going to pick up right back there. If you can hold through the break for us, we're going to come back and continue this conversation. This is Andrew Sorrell guest hosting for Jeff Poore, on with Representative Shane Stringer talking about constitutional carry. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Jack Daniel's whiskey. 1.5.
Whoa, Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. Guest host, Andrew Sorrell. I am a state representative from North Alabama and a candidate for state auditor. Please check me out, andrewsorrell.com. S-O-R-R-E-L-L is how I spell Sorrell. We're still on with Representative Shane Stringer. I'll bring him back on the line. Representative Stringer, we've only got 4 or 5 minutes left in this segment, so this may be a little bit a rapid fire. But I want to continue with what we were talking about on constitutional carry and the safety aspect. Maine is the safest state in the nation statistically. Maine has had constitutional carry now for 6 years, including when they passed it with a Democrat-controlled Senate. Is there any valid safety concern here?
I do not believe so. The legislature did one of the best tools for law enforcement last year with Francie Robertson's bill, the lifetime permit, which also created the prohibited person database. As it stands right now, there's 67 counties, and those 67 counties have different permits. If a law enforcement officer was to pull somebody over, they would not know. I've talked to a lot of police officers and law enforcement over the last few months, and not the first one even realized that there was multiple permits. Everyone believed that, including police chiefs, even believed that there was one standard permit across the state. There is not. If a convicted murderer was to show a police officer a fake permit and it's after hours, they would probably take that at face value and not even know that that person should not have a weapon and does not have a permit.
Right.
Most of your permit offices are only open from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, so after hours, for most of the sheriff's departments, it is difficult or even impossible to find out if a permit is valid. And I've talked to officers that have been in the profession for, 30-plus years and lower, and every one of them says they do not think to call the permit office the following day to confirm if a permit was valid or good. They take it at face value. This prohibited person database is going to allow law enforcement, when they run a tag, it will show if the owner of that vehicle is prohibited. When he runs the occupants, it will show if they are prohibited. This is the first time that law enforcement's had a valid tool. The safety aspects of it, I just do not think there's any safety issue. Every sheriff I've talked to in other states, Arizona, Arkansas, Mississippi, every single one of them tell me the same thing, that crime did not change, that crime didn't go up, violent crime didn't go up. They did not have a rash of officer assaults. There was nothing changed other than it went from a open carry to a constitution carry.
That's absolutely right. Now, Shane, we are in kind of a unique situation because you and I are both carrying constitutional carry bills. And I don't call these competing bills because, first of all, they're virtually identical bills. And second of all, because we are not competing. We are on the same team. I have co-sponsored your bill. You have co-sponsored my bill. In fact, I think we both have north of 35 co-sponsors. I know Speaker McCutcheon has co-sponsored my bill. Victor Gaston, our pro tem, our Connie Rowe, our caucus vice chair. We've got a lot of leadership on board. And I think that the general attitude in the House is let's get behind one bill and let's pass one bill. And I just want the audience to know, I mean, it's not important to me or Shane whose name is on the bill when it passes. We're
That's correct.
Interested in passing the bill. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And you've done a lot more work on this than I have. You've been working on it longer than I have. And I appreciate your effort and your hard work. And we're going to continue to work this together. And, the goal is to get this bill passed, regardless of whose name's on it.
Yeah, exactly right. Down to about 30 seconds here. I've already pre-filed my bill. It's probably not on the internet yet. It hasn't been assigned to a committee. It's going to be House Bill 44 with the 38. By the way, I built this bill from 6 co-sponsors to 38 co-sponsors in 4 years. But you did something I didn't do, and that was you actually bled for the cause. You were fired from your job for your support of constitutional carry. And just final words, we got probably 20 seconds here.
I just was really disappointed and sad that would ever be an issue. I never in a million years thought that myself or anyone else would lose their job over their stance or representing their people.
Yeah, it shouldn't be.
The polls have showed that 71% of our population want this.
Exactly right. Thank you so much, Representative Stringer. We'll be right back.